Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This is CBS, I Am the World. I'm John Batchelor. The New World Report, Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College, is here to help me through the Americas. And we come to something I understand, but how it applies to the Americas is Chile, a state that is in the early stages of getting ready for a presidential contest. President Boric cannot succeed himself. That's the constitution in Chile. And we have this from the Financial Times yesterday, followed up with a series of articles today. China's copper supplies set to run out. That's right. According to this report, China did not bring in enough copper to extend past June unless something is done. And the tariff stories, well, I read from the FT. China's copper stockpiles are on track to dwindle to nothing in just a few months as the market suffers, quote, one of the greatest tightening shocks in its history, on fears of U.S. tariffs. This is the trading house in copper. Huge U.S. demand as buyers rush to get their hands on copper ahead of the potential imposition of levies by the Trump administration, sucking imports of the metal into the country from into the U.S. from the rest of the world and setting it up in direct competition with China for supplies. Why copper? Because without copper, there are no EVs. Without copper, there are no iPhones. There are no iMacs. There are no NVIDIA chips. Without copper, we become an 18th century power. Professor, I did not see this. I can see that the copper market did not see it. Hence the tightening shocks. That's a way of the traders saying, oh boy, we better get on both sides of this trade. China didn't see it. Otherwise, it would have laid in lots of copper. What about Chile? What about this presidential election? We've hardly talked about it. Since Boric became president, it seems to be running well, is it?
Well, it's a lot of interconnected and very important things are going on in this strategic, Pacific-facing South American country, John. So first of all, as you talked about, what's happening in copper is significant. It really emphasizes the degree to which Chile is tied to China through copper. Indeed, something like 60% of all of Chile's exports to the PRC are copper, and something like 80% of Chile's copper in general goes to the PRC. And so they're inextricably bound, even though Chile does export other things to the PRC as well. Now, my sense is that some of the copper dynamics are a temporary glitch. Of course, the copper demand is much stronger in general for factors that you alluded to, its importance in the electrification of transportation and other things. With the EV market, you need a lot of copper to wire homes and buildings and things like that in China. Two things that happened that really had clashed in China. Number one was that before President Trump coming to power, China had continued to expand its copper smelting capability. And so basically it had so much demand for copper inputs into the smelters that it found itself, it couldn't get enough raw copper in. So it's in part an overcapacity problem in China. But ironically, at the same time, there was also a dramatic increase in demand for that Chinese copper before some President Trump's some of the U.S. Tariffs kicked into place, because the idea was we need to get it all before supplies come in at a more high tariff price. And so that's really created a bit of a jump in the market, although even just because of the demand alone, you have copper trading at historic highs. I think it's $4.30 a pound approximately right now in Chile, which again is really good for Chile and the Chilean economy and Codelco. But as you pointed out, that comes on top of a important political transition in Chile, which is that in November of this year, you're going to have national presidential as well as parliamentary elections. And right now, it's a toss-up about what could happen. President Gabriel Boric cannot run. He's constitutionally prohibited. But both the right and left are split. You have on the right, three candidates. One, Jose Antonio Kast, who ran before, is essentially the representing the conservative, kind of traditionally Catholic voice of Chile. You have another, Johannes Kaiser, very interesting. He's a libertarian. So kind of in the same tribe as Javier Milei, and indeed has operated, has adopted some of his rhetoric. And he's running strong in the polls. And then you have a centrist on the right, Evelyn Matea, who, again, with the International Democratic, the UDI, has been doing okay. But then on the left, you have a moderate left by the name of Caroline Toja, who is seen as kind of the continuation of Gabriel Boric, who has really been fading in the polls. You have the left, Jeanette Jara of the Communist Party, which historically in Chile has always had a significant role. And you have a gentleman by the name of Gonzalo Winter, who represents the party that used to be the strong center-left party, the Concertación. And so, you know, Chile's economy is riding high on copper, but in terms of what the political direction of Chile is right now, with both the right and left split as we move towards November, it's really anyone's guess.
The big port that the Chinese completed in Peru, is that part of the matrix now about getting the critical material of copper out? You mentioned to me that Peru has some of the copper that Chile has in abundance. Is that reviving the authority and the prospects of Peru and Chile together?
Well, as you point out, John, if you look at kind of where the minerals lie, it tends to be concentrated in the north of Chile, and that extends into the south, really through all of Peru. And so right now, most of Peru's mines, there's a important port that the Chinese are building in Ica in the south of Peru, where you have some of the big Peruvian mines like San Juan Marcona, as well as a new one called Pampa de Pongo, among others. In the north, you have some of the copper going out through a different series of ports. Chancay will probably be mostly the new Costco Chinese-controlled port that's being built to the north of Lima. That's probably going to be mostly a deep water container port that's going to be run as a hub operation, although eventually you can move some mining products out through there. In Chile, there's the series of three different ports in the north of Chile that most of the Chilean copper and other resources go out through. Although there certainly is some talk about being able to use some Peruvian routes for some Chilean and Brazilian products and vice versa. But overall, absolutely, the importance of that port infrastructure in moving these low value to weight things like copper and iron over to China to reflect its great demand, as well as the flows that occur from China to the region with respect to those consumer products.
Seafaring is the theme we now follow to Panama. The Panama story is consistently confusing because there are some major elbows shoving into this story. One of the set belongs to China, of course. But then there is the Trump administration, major elbows. And then BlackRock, Larry Fink, getting involved in the ports that are owned worldwide by a man named Lee, who lives in Hong Kong and is theoretically an independent billionaire, sharp elbows. However, then the Chinese Communist Party shows up. And after the deal is struck verbally, to my knowledge, between Mr. Fink and the representatives of C.K. Hutchins, the port owner, China crowds in and delays it. That's where we left our melodrama when we last spoke of it with the professor. I see a headline, professor, saying China is now interested in renegotiating on the basis of those two ports, one at either end of the canal. The rest of the ports worldwide, I believe, will go through or are approved to go through to BlackRock. Since then, the melodrama has parts. We've had Secretary Rubio was there at the first of his overseas travels, but Secretary Hegseth has been there. And when we spoke last, there's a plan to rotate in military personnel to the two facilities that the U.S. maintained all those years of it being the canal zone, one at either end. I believe one is known as Fort Sherman. However, there's also talk that the Jungle Training School will be either based at or often show up in Panama. So there's a demonstration of security, military security, that didn't exist before. Is that a positive? Has that solved this? Because as of now, there's been no deal for those two ports that changed their hands other than the PRC through Hong Kong.
Well, John, you're absolutely right. There are enormous number of pieces in motion here that have to do with logistics and politics and geopolitics, among other things. So first, just a couple comments on what you observed about the ports. It does appear that the question of whether the deal of Hutchison selling off its assets either to BlackRock is one of the cases, or possibly to Mediterranean Shipping, separate from a larger BlackRock deal. That seems to be negotiating right now with, again, a lot of Chinese pressure on Hutchison to essentially foil the deal. And so that is still evolving. One of the things that gets overlooked in all of this also is understanding that it's not just about Hutchison and the Chinese, but also recognizing that there is a big commercial war between major global shipping companies. So Maersk, Mediterranean Shipping, Costco, among others. Now, why is this important? Because this is the little noticed piece of this, that the one question is if the deal goes through, for example, if Mediterranean Shipping is able to acquire the Hutchison property, that will actually deny access to a port on the Pacific side of the Panama Canal to the other big player, Maersk. So right now, Maersk had operated out of Hutchison's port. And so if MSC, which is its competitor, gets a hold of that port, then basically MSC operates the two ports and shuts Maersk out of the Pacific. So there's a little bit of wars within wars going on in terms of who dominates this important global logistics hub. But with respect to the security cooperation issue, this is also another interesting factor, because after Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth's visit to Panama, as you alluded to, there is the sense of a desire to deepen U.S. security cooperation. That led to a conversation about the return to of U.S. forces on a rotational basis. So not a permanent presence of U.S. forces, but basically in and out using that facility, the Jungle Warfare School in Fort Sherman and maybe others. Also a renewal of the high-level security dialogue, maybe more U.S. Panama strategic planning to be able to work more closely together, maybe a greater use by the Corps of Engineers to help address some of the challenges in the modernization of the canal and associated water infrastructure. So there were a number of, if maybe oversold, but certainly significant increases in security cooperation. However, at the same time, you have the Panamanian left, which is traditionally railed against these types of cooperation. And so the big thing that's happening this week in reaction to those agreements that were previously tentatively made with Secretary of Defense Hegseth and President Mulino in Panama is you now have the big leftist communist affiliated labor union SunTrax under Saul Melendez basically trying to implement a national strike. The teachers union joined in the strike. Some of the students in University of Panama joined in the strike. At the end, it'll probably come to nothing. It's been widely condemned by the Panamanian business community. However, it does serve as a reminder that there are at least some, especially within the left and the union movement in Panama, that see the increase in security cooperation as a problem and are trying to put pressure on President Mulino for those moves that he's made.
Professor, you've been in government and out of government. You've gone back and forth. Was Panama ever a major focus for so many major players before this moment? This strikes me as romantic, given the origins of the canal. I've collected a number of pictures of the building of the canal, both the failure of the French and then the success of the Americans in the early part of the 20th century. And it was always an antique collection I had, and now it seems especially relevant. Is this new that Panama becomes a major focus of global players?
Well, John, Panama has always been strategically important. It's just always been a little bit more settled. And so, even if you go back to the controversy around the 1977 Carter-Torrijos Treaty that gave back the canal, and that action by President Carter was questioned then. Certainly when Hutchison was first given control of the two ports in 1997, 1999. That was seen as strategically questionable. When Panamanian strongman Manuel Noriega, very anti-US, clearly took military power. We have to remember that was one of the major US interventions in Latin America during the post-Cold War order, where again it was seen as unacceptable that an anti-US drug affiliated dictator had control. And so Panama has always been important, but it's traditionally been that we've worked closely with the Panamanian authorities to manage the canal and manage that relationship without kind of questioning the fundamentals, as I think has been happening right now across the political spectrum.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College, Strategic Studies Institute. We're headed to good news and Mercosur. This is CBS Eye on the World, New World Report.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Chances are, you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody. Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter Trusted Pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter Trusted Pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.